From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. This week, KBIA Health and Wealth reporter Rebecca Smith brings us a special episode. Rebecca works on this really interesting project called Missouri Health Talks. She travels around the state gathering Missourians' conversations about access to health care. Here she brings us conversations about homelessness in both urban and rural communities. Our guests include Jennifer Carter Dockler, the public policy director for the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, and also the vice chair of the Governor's Committee to End Homelessness. We also hear from Teresa Graham, the resident manager of Harvest House, a homeless shelter in Boonville, and from her husband, Frankie Graham, a longtime volunteer.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Missouri Health Talks. I'm Rebecca Smith. Today I'm joined in the studio by Jennifer Carter Dockler, the public policy director for the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, as well as the vice chair for the Missouri Governor's Committee to End Homelessness. Today we're going to be talking homelessness in Missouri. How big of a problem is it? How is the problem being addressed? And what can you do to help? Jennifer, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome. So happy to be here for National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week.
So before we kind of dive into the full conversation, I was wondering if you could even just tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you end up in this field, and how did you become involved with the Governor's Committee to End Homelessness?
I've been at the Coalition about 15 years in a few different staff positions, and shortly after I originally got hired, part of our work is to have different what we call policy collaborations, and we had had a request to fill a seat on the Governor's Committee on Homelessness. So I did that, and I have continued to do it in the various roles I've held at the Coalition.
So what exactly is the Committee to End Homelessness?
Some states call them like an interagency council. It involves a variety of state departments that receive funding related to housing and urban development. So the United States Housing and Urban Development oversees a large amount of federal homeless and housing funds, and they're administered to different state departments. So those state departments participate in the committee, as well as a requirement of HUD is that our state is divided into what we call different continuum of cares, which are supposed to be coordinating different homeless service providers in the community. There's 8 continuum of care in the state, so we have representatives from each of those continuum of cares attend the governor's committee so that they can share information to create statewide needs. We also have other state departments who maybe don't receive HUD funds, but they serve homeless. So, for example, Children's Division. They're one of our statewide partners in terms of when they're working with foster care and adoption and people aging out, wanting to make sure that kids are not going into homelessness. So we involve a variety of organizations that are somehow working with homeless or housing issues to bring together what are statewide trends, what are needs, how do we share information and resources to take what's happening at the local community or at the federal and then figure out what can we do statewide.
Great. Well, before we get started in the questioning part, Jennifer, I want us to listen to just a bit of a conversation that was actually gathered by Missouri Health Talks reporter Jonah McKeown. Jonah sat down with Robert Nichols here in Columbia. He has a colostomy bag, was recently diagnosed with cancer, and is also homeless. So let's take a listen to this bite from this conversation.
I can't tell you that all homeless people are right or all homeless people are wrong. I can just tell you that all homeless people are not criminals, are not out to rob you. When you're homeless, people look down on you like as if you ain't doing something right. And I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I really don't know. I can't work. I got messed up stomach. I got a messed up leg. I've had medical problems all my life. I just wish I could spend the rest of my life in a hospital, because at least people care. They treat me with respect. They all call me sir. You know, I'm not a sir. I'm just a homeless person. But they treat me like I matter, and that's more than I get out here.
So that was Robert Nichols. Like I said, he's homeless here in town. I'm wondering if you have any reflections on just that little bit of conversation.
It illustrates what We know that individuals who become homeless have a life story. They end up having many barriers and challenges. It can become very difficult to find stability and to get the resources that are needed. And they're people, and yet they're oftentimes not treated like that. They're ignored. There's a lot of assumptions made about them or what contributed to them being homeless. And yet it's so important that we do have community resources and systems around to help them, because oftentimes there's been so many barriers and things that have contributed to their situation. But they have a story, and they need help. Everyone needs help.
If you had to quantify it, how much of a problem is homelessness in Missouri? I mean, is the problem real?
We do have a homeless problem in Missouri. It is real. It is often believed that it's, isn't it, quote unquote, more an urban area issue is what is a common statement or question that I've heard. And we often have to come back and say it is a Missouri issue. This is not a rural issue. It's not an urban issue. The numbers might look different, but when you're in a rural area that has a much smaller population than an urban area, it might seem like 20 families is a small number, but in that community, it's a large number. Particularly in rural communities, they oftentimes don't have the same number of social service providers that are available in urban areas. Urban areas, though, have other challenges. They have much higher numbers, and they're not often able to meet everyone who is homeless. So it is a Missouri issue. It just looks different across the state.
What would you say are the detriments to people if they end up homeless in Missouri?
It can increase their risk of crime, actually being a victim of crime. They're oftentimes a victim of a hate crime because they are homeless, because they might not be able to as easily contact law enforcement or have some of the same resources. So oftentimes, simply because they are homeless, it can lead to additional obstacles and barriers. I know we'll talk more about it later, but this is oftentimes what we see with victims of sexual violence or domestic violence, is being homeless, simply not having a roof, a safe place to go to at night, can actually increase somebody's risk of being sexually assaulted or exploited because they're on the street. And so because of that, it can end up leading to additional needs, whether it's from emergency room help. It can sometimes contribute to them maybe participating in a crime because they're hungry. They don't know what resources exist. They're just trying to get some of their fundamental basic needs met.
You just mentioned that homelessness is often thought of as an urban problem, but it's not just an urban problem.
No, we have service providers in rural areas across the state, because people don't necessarily want to leave the community that they've grown up in, or maybe that they have just a few connections. That's what feels like home. When you think about our overall well-being, people need some sense of stability, and how they define home is that. And so home might not be a literal bricks and mortar place. It might be, I have a lot of ties to this community or this river or this place. And so, you know, we were just talking about this at the governor's committee the other week, is, you know, there might be a resource provider 50 miles away, but somebody doesn't want to leave that town that they have some sort of affiliation or connection to.
Right. So we're going to listen to a quick comment made by Blake Witter. She is the HUDVASH coordinator for the Harry S. Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital here in Columbia. She said this in a recent Missouri Health Talks conversation as well. And for those who don't know, HUDVASH is a program that combines housing and urban development vouchers with VA services to help homeless veterans get stable housing. So we're going to take a quick listen to this bite from Blake.
In rural communities, there isn't a lot of knowledge sometimes about people that are street homeless. In a lot of the rural communities that we reach out to and work with for point-in-time counts and other activities throughout the year, they tend to have a lot of response of, well, we don't have that problem here, mm-hmm. or we don't have that issue here. It may not look like someone who you might pops into your mind, a disheveled person living under a bridge or something like that. That is not what homelessness always looks like, and it can be very different because people are doubled up. People are couch surfing. People are not legally residing in a place that they have any kind of ownership to.
We have this vision of homelessness in our head, like Blake just said, and I'm wondering, what is homelessness actually? You know, what constitutes that label?
There are some different definitions just from a policy standpoint, but from a philosophical standpoint, we're oftentimes trying to educate people that if an individual doesn't have a stable, permanent place to live, that is an aspect of homelessness, that if somebody might not be currently living on the street today, but they're living on somebody's couch tonight, and that's not permanent. It's not a lease in their name. They don't know how long until they're going to be asked to leave. That ending homelessness is really about having stable housing.
Do you think that's perhaps the most common misconception about homelessness?
No, I think one of the other common misconceptions is most people end up thinking about a single male most likely who is a veteran. And yes, that is absolutely a critical part of our homeless population, yet it is not the only face or characteristic of homelessness. There's been growing data and trends about families, usually a single mom and kids.
This is Intersection on KBIA. And today, reporter Rebecca Smith brings us a special episode from Missouri Health Talks. We're talking about homelessness and healthcare.
Now, speaking of rural homelessness, I'm joined in the studio by Teresa Graham, the resident manager of Harvest House in Boonville. It's a local homeless shelter in a town of about 8,000, and her husband, Frankie Graham, a longtime volunteer at Harvest House. Guys, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us here.
I was wondering if you guys could just take a few minutes to tell me a little bit about yourselves and what exactly is Harvest House?
Harvest House is a homeless shelter. Not an everyday, not like the Salvation Army, but it's a homeless shelter where we try to go revert back to your living style. We have a kitchen, dining room, living room, sleep room, everything that you use to have at your house. We have a 3-day program, a 30-day program, and a 120-day program. The 3-day program, we give them just to get their bearings, because let's say they come out of Florida or Texas. We've even had a couple of them out of Texas from the hurricanes.
They call to find out if we have any openings.
First of all, I mean, everybody's welcome. I'll give them a home-cooked meal. Teresa, the only nice thing about it, and this is a good joke, I told her she's going to kill me because she cooks for 20 people and there's just two of us. Well, now she cooks for 20 people and there's 20 people to cook for. And she's good at what she does.
Teresa, I'm wondering if you could tell the audience about how many people do you have with you guys on any given day?
We have 32 beds. I've got 12 single women beds. Right off the top of my head, I can't think of how many men's beds I have right now, but I do have a family room, and my family room is set up to where if I have a single dad comes in with kids, then I can put them in that room to where the kids are not upstairs with the other guys. Same with a single mom. If she's got, you know, little ones too, then she can go into that room. But I only do have just the one family room. Right now I do have, I want to say, 12 adults, and I've got one child there.
So I think with homelessness, you so often hear people talk about how that's not a problem in our community, right? We hear that it's an urban problem. It's St. Louis. It's a Columbia problem. But you just said you have 12 adults and one child at Harvest House right now in Boonville, which is a town of 8,000.
8,000 people.
So homelessness exists in your rural community.
Yes. A lot of them just walks the street. Sleeps in the parks.
Stays in the casino at night.
Yeah, a lot of them stays in the casino at night and
Walmart
and hoping that they're not going to get thrown out, hoping that they're finding a meal and staying out. I know we ended up with one that slept at Walmart, and come to find out they had their tents set up outside that had pallets in it. And when it got dark, he was climbing inside this tent and zipping it up and sleeping on the pallets inside the tent until he ended up coming to us at the
Harvest
House.
There's no difference between St. Louis and Boonville or New Franklin. New Franklin's population is 50. I know there's 7 people homeless in a town of 50 people. And what the sad part is, every one of them 50 people know that 7 people. But they turn their backs on them. They don't want to help. And what happened to the second commandment? Love thy neighbor. That's what it's all about.
Do you think people would be surprised to hear that homelessness exists in Boonville, in rural Missouri?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's all over. It's not just in St. Louis, Kansas City. It's in all the little rural towns. I mean, all it takes is losing a job or a house fire, any situation like that, to put them out on the street.
Drugs, domestics. The biggest thing is domestic, and the biggest thing is drugs. We get two or three of them in there, I say two or three a month, that would rather spend their last dime on addiction, on alcohol, and then don't have nothing, and then they don't eat, and then they find themselves homeless because their families give up on them. Another big thing is our domestic. Our domestic's the biggest thing. That's why we try to not tell where our address is, and we're not a domestic shelter, because between 9 and 5, you have to be out looking for a job. Between 9 and 5, we take care of a lot of business. You know, I'm out there hustling jobs for the people that are there. I'm trying to get your drivers. Another biggest thing is IDs. You know, if they've lost everything, they've lost their driver's license, they lost their Social Security card, they've lost birth certificates.
So, Frankie, you said you've been involved with Harvest House since 1999.
Yes, ma'am.
And then, Teresa, you said you became the resident manager this past summer?
May the 1st.
May 1st, full-time. We were assistant managers for a little over a year before that.
Okay. So you guys have been working with this organization for a long time, and Teresa, I'm going to start with you, but I'm wondering, what is the story, the, like, success story that you always go back to when you're trying to lift yourself back up?
I've got so many of them. I've got one that actually broke my heart when she moved out. She called me. She came, she stayed with us, so she decided that she wanted to move to be closer to her kids. I was like, okay, are you sure about this? And she said yes, so when she did, it was pretty rough on me. I had grown to her pretty close, and I try to connect with each and every one of them somehow or another. But with her, it just kind of like she fell in my lap. And I took really concern with her. But anyway, she did move to Hannibal. She gets to see her kids 2 to 3 times a week now. She's got a good job there. She's got her own vehicle. She's back up on her feet. She stays in contact with me every day. If she's not texting me, she's at least calling me.
Now, Jennifer, going back to homelessness throughout the state, I know you work in the sexual and domestic violence field as well as the Governor's Committee to End Homelessness. Could you perhaps talk a little bit about the intersection of those two roles? Does domestic and sexual violence have a role in homelessness in our state?
So one of the things that studies have shown us, at least for adult females, is that domestic violence tends to be the number one contributor to them ending up homeless. Whether it's been the economic abuse from their abusive partner, them having to flee communities for safety, they ended up staying temporarily in a shelter and things sort of spiraled, that when they look at the studies for adult women, and oftentimes those individuals also have accompanying children, that domestic violence is one of the main factors that they're identified that contributed to them leading to homelessness.
And is that a larger problem in rural or urban communities, or
it's
is it kind of ubiquitous?
It's going to be a statewide issue, actually a nationwide issue.
What are some other factors that perhaps could lead to someone ending up homeless?
So with the youth, sometimes what we see is youth might not be in the best family environment. It might be that there's abuse, domestic violence happening in their home, or maybe they're experiencing abuse or neglect. And so sometimes youth have been running away from their home, trying to seek other options for safety. And sometimes it's that they were kicked out of their home. Maybe they came out based on sexual orientation and the family decided to kick them out. So there are different reasons that contribute to youth. Youth have their own dynamics. There's also a number of homeless agencies across the state that are looking at particular in youth who are homeless. And again, some of those are because they left, and some of them are because they were kicked out.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today we're hearing a special report from Rebecca Smith of Missouri Health Talks. We're talking about homelessness and health care.
Now, you mentioned earlier that common misconception about the single male veteran who's homeless. And one thing you heard talked about quite often when you talk about veteran homelessness is things like PTSD. Well, through some of the work that Missouri Health Talks has been doing on homelessness, we've heard from individuals that substance use disorders and mental health conditions can definitely play a role. So I'm going to play another short bite. This one is from Heather Harlan, who works with Phoenix Health Programs here in Columbia. And she addresses that. And I'd like us to talk a little bit about substance use disorders and mental health once we listen to this bite.
First of all, not everyone who is homeless has a substance use disorder. The odds are very good, however, that someone who is homeless might at least have a mental health issue, depression, anxiety, trauma, something else that's going on. Even if someone did not turn to tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use as a way of coping with trauma, they are still at much higher risk for other physical ailments such as diabetes, certain kinds of cancer, hypertension, financial problems, less productivity at work, marital issues. There are a lot of things that we as a population would be much higher risk for.
So, like I said, that was Heather Harlan with Phoenix Health Programs, and she mentions that not everyone has a substance use disorder, but mental health is really present in this community. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. We would parallel it to victims of domestic violence, too. Not every victim of domestic violence has a mental health or substance abuse issue, yet it is very common that they will. There's often, as I mentioned earlier, there's co-occurring issues that end up happening because, you know, you have one barrier and then it kind of leads to additional barriers, which can make it more challenging to lead to a place of stability. So it's not uncommon among folks who are homeless that they might have co-occurring substance abuse issues or mental health issues. And so then it's trying to figure out which issue are you addressing, how do you try to address simultaneously. Part of why the housing ends up being so critical is there's a model called Housing First that's been promoted for a number of years, because what traditionally service providers would do is think about, well, how do you get somebody clean and then get them housed, versus if you can get somebody housed and get them off the streets and have that, then offer wraparound services and really have them voluntary and tailored to that person, it can be much more successful in the long run. It can create some challenges to do it that way, but the concept is house somebody first, because that will also help them to be able to address some of those other co-occurring issues versus trying to address the other issues first.
You're working with this huge group of organizations to try and address this problem in the state. And I'm wondering if perhaps people who are listening today may be wondering, like, what they can do to help. Obviously, they, you know, aren't a continuum of care in their own and they can't solve the problem. But how can individuals, ordinary people, help address this problem in the state?
I think it's really important to get connected to the agencies that are providing homeless services to find out what are their needs. You know, asking the local nonprofits in the community, you know, are there things that you're needing? How can we help? Whether it's making a financial contribution or helping to raise donations. I think it's always good to go to the source of who's offering the services about what needs are they seeing, because they might have a need for a donation that you might not have considered. Sometimes it's things as simple as shampoo or conditioner, and sometimes it's things like coats in the winter. But it's always good to go to the homeless organizations and say, hey, I'm interested in either volunteering my time or contributing financially. What are your current needs and how can I be connected? If they're wanting more long-term, nonprofits have board of directors. There's always needing board members to be able to serve and really be an ambassador for the missions of those agencies. So there's different ways that folks can get connected with what those homeless service providers are doing.
Now, let's say someone who's homeless here in Columbia or somewhere else in the state is listening today and they hear this piece. What would your advice be to them?
That they're not alone. There are service providers out there. If that's something that they're interested in, hopefully that they can get connected, whether it's a food pantry, whether it is an emergency shelter, that there are folks who are trying to help meet their needs.
It seems like almost every day in the news we're hearing about something going on at the federal level when it comes to Congress, whether that's tax reform or ACA repeals, all those sorts of things. And you mentioned that a lot of the initiatives for the Committee to End Homelessness are coming from federal dollars. And I'm wondering how the committee is considering or dealing with possible policy changes at both the state or federal level, whether that would be an ACA repeal, whether that be changes to housing and urban development policies and vouchers or changes to Medicaid. I mean, how are you guys dealing with those possibilities?
So the Governor's Committee as a whole is not like a lobbying or advocacy agency that way, although advocacy agencies like Empower Missouri are a member. So we really are wanting to try to share information and discussing the impact of whatever policy changes is being suggested. So what is the impact if the current proposed federal budget cutting some of the housing and urban development funds happens? What is the potential impact in our communities? How might that potentially increase our homelessness numbers? How would we be prepared? Or how do we, again, address talking points so that people are aware of this is a Missouri issue? How are we going to be able to address it? Because by making sure that our homeless population is housed, it can lead to a decrease of expenses elsewhere, from emergency room visits to law enforcement response. It has a cost savings in other areas.
For you, if you could, you know, wave a magic wand, where would what would be the state of homelessness in Missouri in 5 years, in 10 years, and maybe 50 years?
My ideal would be that any person who is in need, whether it's been chronic long-term homelessness or somebody who's now had a crisis and potentially is going to be experiencing first-time homelessness, whether it's a result of losing a job or domestic violence, that there are enough service providers and resources in the community when they have nowhere else to turn, and that they know they can contact them and they're able to easily be accepted and provided resources. That although we have some amazing resources in the state, they're still currently not enough. But that would be my pipe dream, that if somebody realizes that this is an issue that they're experiencing, that it's very easy to know who to call, that provider is able to easily connect them and we're able to easily meet their needs to stop the issue before it continues to spiral.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for sitting down with me today to talk homelessness throughout the state. This has been a special from Missouri Health Talks on homelessness right here in our home state. We were joined today by Jennifer Carter Dockler from the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence and on the Governor's Committee to End Homelessness, as well as Teresa and Frankie Graham, the resident manager and a volunteer at Harvest House in Boonville. Thanks to Jonah McKeown for producing segments of today's show. For more information on the topic of homelessness in Missouri and more conversations from Missouri Health Talks from throughout the state, you can visit kbia.org or missourihealthtalks.org. I'm Rebecca Smith.
Thank you for joining us here on Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. And of course, thank you to our guests, Teresa and Frankie Graham from Harvest House in Boonville, and Jennifer Carter Dockler with the Missouri Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, as well as the Governor's Committee to End Homelessness. Thank you to Rebecca Smith for hosting this week's show. Our music is Montana Skies. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM.